Hello everyone, John Sands speaking. Welcome to the edition of the Chester and Flint Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, July 17th. I hope all are well and not suffering too much from the very, very hot weather. In my last broadcast, I quoted the medieval "Summer is coming in," and how appropriate that was. I hope that all are well and not suffering too much from the hot, hot weather. I can't really say I like it, but we must always accept and live through it, taking all the precautions we can to avoid harmful effects. There's so much advice about drawing curtains and opening and shutting windows and doors that it's difficult to know if one is doing the right or wrong thing. My main help is a powerful pivoting fan which hadn't been used for years. I bought it about 40 years ago when my wife was in the county's hospital in an over-hot ward. My next-door neighbour was an accredited engineer working for the National Health in the hospital. He examined and passed the fan, so it was permitted in the ward and provided considerable comfort for several patients. Newly resurrected, it still works very well and makes life tolerable in my living room. I find upstairs a different problem. Decisions and more decisions, in bed, on bed, with pyjamas, without pyjamas, with or without bed sheets. Since I don't have visitors, it's a fairly straightforward problem. No one but me is affected. I'll still be happy when the temperature drops to tolerable. Apart from national and international politics, the main thing of note at present is the Football World Cup. I feel sorry for the players who have to give their best in hot climates and often suffer for it. It's a shame that newspapers report that lots of English supporters had been arrested in this country for riotous behaviour when the English team beat Norway. It's not what one hopes or expects. Let's hope the final contests are more orderly viewed. It's also to be hoped that in the next few weeks of the school holidays, the weather won't make family life more difficult. It can sometimes be a trying time for parents. Good luck to them. Now that my bird box is empty again, I can spend some time in the garden as everything has just grown at top speed. Lots of trimming and cutting needed. Apples are lying all round my Bramley tree, which is simply loaded. More distribution needed in a few weeks. Time just flies. I know several neighbours will be happy to make their apple pies without cost. It makes me happy too, as I'm not really an apple eater. Perhaps I should start to grow grapes again. I did years ago, quite successfully. Well, what has been going on locally? The newspaper extracts should tell us. Sunrise in Chester on Sunday, July 19th is 5:08 a.m. and sunset 9:33 p.m. And now over to the readers.
Hello, Esther Newt here. A large number of fire crews were called out to tackle a major blaze out in the open on the outskirts of Chester. Fire engines in initial attendance from Malpas, Chester and Nantwich, plus the all-terrain wildfire unit from Macclesfield, rapid response unit from Nantwich, drone unit and water bowser attended the scene in Hart Hill Lane near Bickerton, at about 4:50 p.m. on Wednesday, July the 15th. Support from a fire engine from Whitchurch and relief crews from Northwich, Knutsford, Bollington, Penketh, Winsford and Alsager were also in attendance. A spokesperson for Cheshire Fire and Rescue Service said, firefighters dealt with a fire covering approximately 4,800 square metres in a field at Hart Hill near Bickerton. Specialist firefighting equipment was deployed to tackle the blaze and the area has been divided into sectors to manage the incident. Nearby were advised to close windows and doors if they can smell smoke in their properties. Crews worked through the evening and into the night to get the large fire under control, and by 10 p.m. the operation had been scaled back to 4 fire crews. In an update at 7:45 a.m. on Thursday, July the 16th, the spokesman added, attendance was scaled back to 3 fire engines overnight, and firefighters have made continued progress in damping down the fire using a hose reel water jet and main jet. From 8:30 a.m, 2 fire engines will take over to continue operations this morning.
Hello, this is Diane Frith. The family of a Liverpool woman who died in Chester have said she was beautiful, selfless and amazing. Carol Tinsley, 70 and from Liverpool, died at around 11:30 p.m. on Friday, July the 10th, after she was involved in a serious collision in Parkgate Road, Chester, at the junction with Welsh Road. The collision involved 2 vehicles, a grey Cupra Born and a black Kia Sportage. Sadly, as a passenger in the Kia, Carol suffered serious injuries and was pronounced dead at the scene. The driver of the Kia, along with a further 2 passengers, suffered serious injuries and were taken to hospital. A 4th passenger suffered minor injuries. The driver of the Cupra was uninjured. No arrests have been made and inquiries remain ongoing. Carol's family said, our family have been shattered and ripped apart with the loss of our beautiful, selfless, amazing Carol, and we were all blessed to be a part of her life. We are all truly heartbroken and ask for privacy at this sad time. You can report information in relation to the collision to Cheshire Police by calling 101 or visiting their website.
Hello, it's Kath Davis here. Chester's new Women and Children's Building has been named one of the region's best new developments. The £110 million facility at the Countess of Chester Hospital claimed the titles of Project of the Year Cheshire, Wirral and Warrington, and the Sustainability Award at the 20th Annual North West Regional Construction Awards. Celebrated for its family-focused design and forward-thinking approach to energy use, the building opened in early September 2025. Jane Tomkinson, OBE, Chief Executive of the Countess of Chester Hospital NHS Foundation Trust, said, "This building has put Chester on the map." Families felt the difference from day one. The rest of the NHS is now looking to us for ideas, with the whole construction industry recognising it as among the best built in the last year, for its sustainable design and the way families and staff shaped it from the start. It shows what modern healthcare can look like: welcoming, sustainable and designed around the people who use it. We're proud of what this means for our community. Judges said it stood out because it was designed around families and built with the future in mind. In its first week of operation, twice as many expectant parents contacted the hospital to book maternity care, with 6 times the usual number on opening day. Since opening, the building has become the first completed NHS facility in England to meet the NHS Net Zero building standard. It uses no gas, generates its own clean electricity, and monitors its energy use in real time. National health leaders have visited to learn from the scheme, and the building has drawn attention from university teams and maternity services across UK. The Hospital Trust is currently experiencing improvements elsewhere. A modern stroke ward opened in October, and the Chester Haematology Centre is set to open this summer. A £7.1 million upgrade to the hospital's A&E entrance and surrounding areas has already been a positive impact, with further investment planned to expand assessment and monitoring facilities. Long-term ambitions include becoming a teaching hospital and expanding community-based care.
Hello, I'm Patrick Blunden. A Chester man who was involved in a fight in the early hours of the morning in Bridge Street has been told he faces all options because of his record. Matthew Huxley, aged 25, of Leaside Road, Chester, appeared at Chester Magistrates Court on Tuesday, July the 14th. Huxley pleaded guilty to using threatening or abusive words or behaviour in relation to the incident, which occurred at around 2:30 a.m. on Friday, June the 12th. Derrin Gibney, prosecuting, told magistrates that a uniformed patrol had been called to a fight in Bridge Street in Chester after a CCTV operative had identified two males. Huxley and the complainant had separated from a larger group and appeared to be arguing initially. Huxley was seen waving his arms around before the altercation became physical. The defendant threw two punches, connecting with the complainant's head and causing him to fall to the ground. He was also said to be argumentative with officers as they approached. The court heard that Huxley had five convictions for 10 previous offences and had been released from custody in April 2024. The prosecution added that the incident had involved substantial force and that punches to the head and the incident's escalation to violence had been aggravating factors. Steve Coop, defending Huxley, said he has a record, but not a long record. Mr. Coop added that the defendant had been drinking and that this has likely affected his judgment. Magistrates and the defence agreed that a pre-sentence report would be required. Chair Royal Barron said that the matter was too serious to be dealt with by way of a fine, and that insight from probation in the form of an all-options report would aid with the sentencing. Huxley is due to return to Chester Magistrates Court on Wednesday, August the 12th.
Hello everyone, Margaret Bellis here. Cheshire Police has been named one of the top performing forces in the country. In a report published by His Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services, HMICFRS, Cheshire Constabulary was placed in Level 1. This means no further action is needed under the National Performance System. Under the new Police Performing System, all police forces in England and Wales are graded from Level 1 to Level 4, with Level 4 being special measures. I'm proud that we have been assigned to Level 1, reaffirming the excellent service we are delivering to the public of Cheshire, said Chief Constable Mark Roberts. This follows our recent end-of-year figures, where we were ranked top in the country for crime outcome rates, and we have the highest charge stroke summons outcome rate in the UK for overall crime, demonstrating our commitment to bring offenders to justice and protecting vulnerable people. The force is also the best in the country for tackling violent crime, stalking and harassment, sexual offences and burglary. It also holds some of the highest charge rates for vehicle crime and shoplifting. Cheshire Police was the only force last year to be graded outstanding for managing offenders and suspects, and one of just two forces to receive an outstanding grade for protecting vulnerable people. These results are outstanding and reflect the hard work that officers and staff across the county deliver day in, day out, to ensure that we continue to provide the best service possible, supporting the people who need our help and to lock up those that cause misery and suffering, said Chief Constable Roberts.
Hello everyone, I'm Sarah Bell. Police deployed live facial recognition, LFR, technology in Chester City Centre on Saturday, July the 11th. With the city centre set to welcome increased numbers of visitors for Chester races, the constabulary say the deployment would support officers in identifying individuals who are wanted by police, outstanding suspects, and those who pose a risk of harm. LFR alerts officers in real time if a person on a specific pre-approved watch list passes through the area being scanned. Chester Constabulary said it will be available to speak with members of the public, businesses and community groups to explain the technology and listen to concerns. Also to offer reassurance about the safeguards in place, it adds that strict privacy, data protection and human rights safeguards are in place for every LFR deployment. Only images of individuals on a pre-approved watch list are used by the system. Officers reviewing any potential matches must also confirm the identity before any action is taken. A dispersal order was also in place from 12 p.m. on Friday the 10th of July until 12 p.m. on Sunday the July the 12th. The dispersal order allows officers to ban anyone from the area for up to 48 hours to prevent disorder. The area covered by the order is highlighted in a map, which is provided to anyone issued with a direction to leave. Police said, as well as an increased police presence, dispersal orders serve as an additional tactical option that allows us to directly combat antisocial behaviour head on before it escalates. Members of the public can find more information about live facial recognition on the constabulary's website, including details on how the technology works and the safeguards that govern its use. Anyone with information about antisocial behaviour in their area is urged to contact Cheshire Police via the Cheshire Police website.
Hello, Jan Woodhouse here. The sex offender has been warned that the court will run out of patience with him if he fails to comply with notification requirements or commits further breaches. Mark Perrin, 37, of Auckland Road, Chester, appeared at Chester Magistrates Court on Tuesday, July the 14th. Perrin pleaded guilty to failing to comply with the notification requirements of the Sex Offenders Register. CPS prosecutor Darren Gibney told the court that Perrin was required to report to officers weekly and, as he was registered as no fixed abode at the time, this would require him to attend a police station in his area. Miss Gibney said that Perrin had notified police that he was homeless on Wednesday, May the 15th, 2026. However, he did not attend the following notification appointment on Thursday, May the 23rd. At the time, he was subject to a 10-month suspended sentence for engaging in sexual communication with a child, imposed in July 2025. At the time of the incident, Mr. Jones said that he had been arrested for an unrelated matter and he had been told to leave the family home where he had been staying. He had subsequently missed appointments with probation and had got to the police station late on Thursday, May the 23rd, but by this point the offence had already been committed. He has also triggered his suspended sentence order by admitting his breaching probation. The probation service confirmed that Perrin's suspended sentence was 10 months, suspended for 2 years, and their records confirmed that he had gone off the radar at the time of the offence. Magistrates were convinced that Perrin's failure to comply was the result of a difficult period of time, with Chair Roy Barron warning You won't have to do this many more times, and the court will run out of patience with you. Perrin was given a fine of £200 for failing to comply with his requirements, and an additional £40 to mark the breach of the suspended sentence. He will also pay £80 mandatory surcharge and court costs of £85.
Residents living a few feet from the site of a proposed firelighter storage warehouse have expressed relief that the planning application has been deferred. People living on Warren Road in Rossmore live just 50 metres from Tiger Tim, a manufacturing site for the world's largest producer of firelighters and barbecue lighters. But on Wednesday, Flintshire County Council's Planning Committee agreed to defer the plans for further reports into fire safety and the impact on a historic monument nearby. Officers told committee members they intended to seek further details from North Wales Fire and Rescue Service regarding fire safety, emergency vehicle access, firefighting water supply, and wider risks to nearby properties associated with the proposed increase in on-site storage. The deferral is also expected to allow consultation with CADW regarding the potential impact of the proposed development on the setting of the nearby Schedule Monument at Moyle Gaer, an Iron Age hill fort of national importance. If approved, the plans would have seen a three-storey warehouse able to hold almost 1,000 pallets of firelighters built on the site. Following a site visit by members of the planning committee, however, it was agreed to defer the decision to a later date. The decision to put the plans on hold was praised by local members and residents. "This is a welcome and sensible pause," said Councillor Fran Lister, who represents Brinford and Halkin. Residents have consistently said they are not against Tiger Tim investing in the site or modernising its operation. The concern has always been whether this particular proposal is the right scale, in the right form, for this village setting. The site visit made very clear why residents are so concerned. This is not an isolated industrial estate. It sits directly alongside homes, pensioners' bungalows, and narrow residential roads. The community has put forward constructive suggestions about what may be more acceptable. We hope this pause will be an opportunity for the applicant to work with residents and ward members to find a better compromise.
North Wales's only permanent Olympic-sized ice rink will reopen to the public at the weekend following 6 weeks of essential maintenance. Deeside Ice Rink will welcome skaters back from Sunday, July the 19th, after a planned programme of works saw the previous ice surface removed and replaced with a brand new sheet of ice. The maintenance also included essential infrastructure work beneath the rink, with the investment designed to ensure the facility continues to provide a safe, high-quality experience for the thousands of people who use it each year. Families, skating clubs and visitors from across North Wales are now being invited back onto the ice, with public skating sessions, lessons and club activities all returning in time for the summer holidays. To mark the reopening, operator Gwella is offering 20% off selected public skating sessions until September the 1st, with prices starting from £7.60 as part of the promotion. Andrew Bentley, Managing Director at Gwella, said, "Deeside Ice Rink is one of Flintshire's most unique leisure attractions and an important facility for communities across North Wales. Every week it welcomes families, learn to skate participants, ice hockey players, synchronised skating teams and elite athletes. We're delighted to welcome everyone back onto the ice ahead of the summer holidays. We know the temporary closure disrupted lessons, training and regular visits, but this essential investment will help ensure the rink continues to provide an excellent experience for everyone who uses it. People inspired to take up skating can also sign up to Gwella's Learn to Skate programme. New customers who enrol before the end of July and begin lessons in August will receive October's lessons free, subject to the promotion's terms and condition. Visitors can also enjoy Deeside Leisure Centre's indoor skate park, an inflatable park, with selected children's sessions at those attractions also included in Gwella's 20% summer promotion until September the 1st.
A man has been locked up after a crime spree involving a dangerous drink drive crash and abuse towards police officers. Alfie Colliver Williams of Chester Road in Oakenholt appeared for sentence at Carnarvon Crown Court on Wednesday via video link from HMP Berwyn. The 26-year-old had previously admitted a raft of offences, including drink driving times two, driving without insurance, dangerous driving, assaulting an emergency worker, using threatening or abusive words or behaviour, and criminal damage. Laura Knightley, prosecuting, told the court that the most serious offences happened shortly after 2:20 a.m. on February 26 this year, when an officer heading east on the A55 near Hollywell was informed of a broken-down vehicle on an unlit part of the expressway. The officer went to assist the stranded motorist. As the officer got out of the police car and opened a rear door to retrieve his jacket, Colliver Williams approached in his vehicle at what appeared to be high speed. He collided with the police vehicle and delivered a glancing blow to the officer's leg, causing injury. Colliver Williams drove off after the collision, which is estimated to have caused around £19,000 in damage to the police car and required a trip to the hospital for the officer, though thankfully he sustained only bruising to his lower body. The defendant was spotted refuelling his vehicle in Connors Quay a while later. Following his arrest, he was found to be significantly over the drink drive limit. Judge Timothy Petts categorised the defendant's behaviour as a spree of offending and the dangerous driving offence as particularly frightening. Overall, the judge handed down a 2-year immediate custodial sentence and a 5-year driving ban. Once the ban is complete, Colliver Williams must pass an extended retest before he can legally get behind the wheel.
Five parks and green spaces across Flintshire have been recognised among the best in Wales after receiving prestigious Green Flag Awards for 2026-27. Mould Cemetery has become the first cemetery in the county to achieve the honour. Keep Wales Tidy announced the latest Green Flag Awards today, recognising parks and green spaces that meet the highest standards for safety, cleanliness, environmental management and visitor experience. Three well-known sites, Bailey Hill, Greenfield Valley Heritage Park and Wepper Park, have all retained their Green Flag Awards, while D Park Community Woodland Place for You and Mould Cemetery have received the accolade for the first time. The five sites are among 93 parks and green spaces across Wales to achieve full Green Flag status this year. A further 237 volunteer-managed sites received Green Flag Community Awards, meaning Wales retains more Green Flag Community Awards than any other country, delivering the scheme for the third consecutive year. For Mould Town Council, the Cemeteries Award marks a significant milestone as it becomes the first cemetery in Flintshire to achieve Green Flag status. Over recent years, the cemetery has benefited from habitat creation, enhanced planting, biodiversity projects, and environmentally sustainable management, transforming it into both a peaceful place of remembrance and an important haven for wildlife. Cemetery Superintendent Matthew William Cook said the award reflected the commitment shown by the cemetery team every day. He said, "Receiving the Green Flag Award is something the whole cemetery team is immensely proud of. It recognises the hard work, care and attention that goes into maintaining the cemetery every single day.
Hundreds of people lined the streets of Buckley on Tuesday the 14th of July as the town came together under glorious summer sunshine to celebrate the 170th Buckley Jubilee. Families, friends and visitors packed the pavements along the procession route, with children waving commemorative flags and generations gathering to watch one of Wales's oldest surviving community traditions. The Buckley Jubilee officially began in 1857 as a temperance movement meeting and has since become one of the town's defining annual events. While similar jubilees once took place in communities across the country, Buckley is believed to be the only one that continues today. Held each year on the second Tuesday in July, the celebration centres on a service on Higher Common before a procession through the town led by the Royal Buckley Town Band. This year's landmark celebration marked 170 years since the Jubilee officially began, with the Royal Buckley Town Band once again leading the procession through the streets. Colourful church banners from Buckley Cross Methodist Church, Ebenezer Baptist Church, Drury Lane Methodist Church, the Parish of Beestry, St Matthew's Church, St John's United Reformed Church, and Our Lady of the Rosary Church were carried proudly through the town alongside scouts, guides, brownies, and a host of community organisations. Reflecting on why the celebration has endured for so long, the Reverend Jenny Clark of St Matthew's Church said, "The form of the Jubilee has changed over the years, but at its heart the same spirit is here. We are joining together people of faith from diverse traditions and backgrounds." Leading this year's historic procession was Buckley Mayor Councillor Julia Jones, who described it as an absolute honour. "It's amazing, absolutely amazing," she said. "It's lovely to see the scouts, the guides and the brownies all getting involved, and their parents as well." Councillor Jones also praised the inclusion of a land train in this year's procession, allowing those unable to walk the route to still take part.
A light aircraft based at Liverpool spent an hour and a half flying low over the Dee estuary on Saturday, tracing a flight path that appears to spell out the words, "I'm bored." The aircraft, a Piper Tomahawk registered GRVNA and operated by Liverpool-based Ravenair, departed Liverpool Airport at 11:25 a.m. on the 11th of July 2026 and landed back there at 1:26 p.m., a flight of 2 hours. Of that, 1 hour and 36 minutes were spent over the Dee estuary, tracing a series of tight angular loops over the water, close to Gronant, Mostyn and Holywell. Aaron Rhines, a US-based content creator whose TikTok account focuses on flight tracking data and has more than 1 million followers, was the first to flag the flight. Posting on TikTok, "This pilot took off in a Piper Tomahawk from Liverpool this morning and apparently got sick of it pretty quickly because he started writing, 'I'm bored in the sky,' only 20 minutes after takeoff." Position data from the flight independently supports that account, showing the aircraft enter the area where the loops were traced at 10:46 a.m., almost exactly 20 minutes after taking off, and spent around 21 minutes tracing the pattern. Viewed on the flight tracking map, the path opens with a sharp zigzag resembling a capital M, followed by a squared-off loop and a rounder one that sits side by side like a B and an O. before the track narrows into smaller, looser loops trailing off towards Greenfield in a shape that reads like lowercase letters tapering away. Wayne Barrett, Ravenair's operations manager, told the BBC the flight was a test run after a cylinder had been replaced on the aircraft and that everything had checked out. He said he thought the pilot was literally a bit bored on what was otherwise a routine flight. Barrett said the pilot was not in trouble, though the flight had drawn considerable attention, and confirmed the aircraft was safely back in its hangar with the pilot on his day off. The aircraft also traced further loops near West Kirby on the Wirral side of the estuary before returning to Liverpool.
Specsavers Mould handed out more than 80 bottles of water to shoppers at Mould Market as temperatures reached 30 degrees. Team members from the store joined market goers to share advice on keeping eyes healthy during the hot weather. Dehydration can reduce tear production, which can lead to dry, irritated eyes, blurred vision, and eye fatigue. People who wear contact lenses can also experience more discomfort and sensitivity in warm weather. Jack Davies, retail director at Specsavers Mould, said, "It was lovely to meet so many local people during Mould Market Day and share some simple advice about the importance of staying hydrated for eye health. Small steps, such as drinking enough water and protecting your eyes from the sun, can help people stay comfortable during warmer weather. We were really pleased we could do our bit to help." The initiative follows a bake-off and raffle held by the store during Deafblind Awareness Week, which ran from the 22nd to the 28th of June, raising £250 for the charity Deafblind UK. Deafblindness is the combination loss of sight and hearing to the extent that communication, mobility, and access to information are affected. Mr. Davis said, "We're delighted to have raised £250 for Deafblind UK, which provides such vital support, advice and companionship for people living with dual sensory loss, helping to reduce isolation and improve independence." Specsavers Mould is open 7 days a week. The store also offers a home visit service for people unable to leave their home unaccompanied due to disability or illness.
Roadworks on a major Chester road are set to start on Monday and will last around 2 months, according to the council. Cheshire West and Chester Council has announced that from July the 13th, there will be work to upgrade a junction and traffic lights on the A51 Hoole Lane in Boughton. The road takes traffic out of the city towards Cristleton, Tarvin and beyond. A council spokesman said, "We will be upgrading the traffic signals at the A51 Hoole Lane Junction as part of an ongoing programme to replace ageing equipment and reduce the risk of signal failures. While the signals are being replaced, we will also improve the junction and pedestrian facilities to bring them up to current standards. We appreciate that these works may cause some disruption. Thank you for your patience and support while we carry out these essential improvements to make the junction safer, more reliable, and more accessible for everyone. The scheme includes installation of new traffic signal equipment and cabling, new ducting chambers and sockets, upgrades to splitter islands, dropped crossings and curbs, new tactile paving to improve accessibility, carriageway resurfacing before the new signals are switched on. The council spokesman added that work has been scheduled for the summer to help minimise disruption. They say lane closures and road closures will be required at different stages of the programme. At the start of the scheme, lane closures will be in place on the A51 and Hoole Lane will be closed at the junction. Access to Hoole Lane will be from the A41 and exit will be via Westminster Road. Arrangements will be in place for larger vehicles. The spokesman added, "We will provide regular updates on our website throughout the works."
Chester Zoo has secured major new funding to aid rare invertebrates and also to protect one of the UK's rarest wildflowers. The funding comes as part of Natural England's £60 million species recovery programme, supporting 130 projects across the country to protect 364 threatened species of animals and plants. The award will support two key conservation efforts, the creation of a native species recovery hub and further work to conserve the critically endangered lady's slipper orchid. Irie Gill, General Manager at Chester Zoo, said global conservation is important, but we believe conservation should start at home. I'm confident we will rise to the challenge of helping species on our doorstep. The new recovery hub will focus on breeding glutinous snails, a species found only in Bala Lake, Gwynedd, and two other highly threatened invertebrates. These snails will be bred in insurance colonies at the zoo to help restore wild populations. Work will also continue on the lady's slipper orchid, one of Britain's rarest flowers. Once common in parts of Derbyshire, Yorkshire, County Durham and Cumbria, the orchid declined due to habitat loss and over-collection by enthusiasts in the 19th and 20th centuries. Only one wild plant was rediscovered in Yorkshire in 1930. Chester Zoo has worked with partners including the Yorkshire Wildlife Trust, Plant Life International, the National Trust and RBGQ to cultivate and protect the species, often at undisclosed locations. Phil Essene, head of plants at Chester Zoo, said, "Our partnership has prevented the extinction of the orchid and we're on the brink of achieving self-sustaining populations in the wild." The funding is part of the government's Wild Again, Restoring England's Wildlife initiative. Lucy Rampling, Trusts and Foundations Manager at Chester Zoo, said, "This funding will have a huge impact in helping conservation organisations like Chester Zoo safeguard these incredible species for generations to come."
Hospitality students are getting a taste of the restaurant industry through a new collaboration. Hickory Smokehouse has teamed up with Cheshire College to provide hands-on experience in hospitality for students, including a behind-the-scenes visit to Hickory's founding Chester restaurant. The partnership aims to give young people practical industry exposure and strengthen career pathways into hospitality. John Kelly, head of training at Hickory's, said, "Hospitality is all about people and we're incredibly passionate about supporting the next generation coming into the industry. Training has always been a huge part of the Hickory's culture and something we've invested in from day one. We're proud of our roots in Chester and committed to creating opportunities for local people to build rewarding long-term careers with us." During a recent visit to the Ellesmere Port campus, Mr. Kelly met hospitality students alongside lecturer Adam Gaunt-Evans and toured the college's professional kitchens and training facilities. Students were then invited to Hickory's Chester restaurant for a behind-the-scenes tour. They learned about the restaurant's imported smokers and watched chefs cutting their famous 16-hour slow and low brisket. Mr. Gaunt-Evans said, "It was great to welcome the Hickory's team to the college and give them the opportunity to meet our students. and getting on hands-on restaurant experience and working with the chefs at the Chester restaurant was invaluable for us. Partnerships like this are incredibly useful in helping learners understand the real opportunities available within hospitality and gain insight from successful employers operating in the industry today. Founded in Chester more than 15 years ago, Hickory's has grown from a single smokehouse into one of the UK's leading authentic barbecue restaurants, with training, development and progression remaining at the heart of the business. Through hands-on training and development programmes, many employees have progressed into senior management and specialist chef positions.
The Met Office, government officials and the heads of 16 of the UK's biggest visitor attractions gathered at Chester Zoo on Monday, July the 13th for a weather summit. The event follows Chester Zoo's warning in March that misleading rain icons on weather apps could be costing some attractions up to £137,000 in a single day, a call backed at the time by more than 80 attractions. The group argued the problem isn't weather forecast accuracy, but how it's displayed, with a brief overnight shower sometimes shown as an all-day washout. Dom Strange, Chief Operating Officer of Chester Zoo, said, "In March, we said the problem wasn't the forecast. It was the single icon used to sum up an entire day. Since then, we've had constructive conversations with the Met Office, and this summit is the next step." Chaired by Visit Britain board member Nigel Wilkinson, MBE, the plan was to bring together around 30 delegates, including senior Met Office figures, including the head of Public Weather Service and the head of science, CEOs and directors from 16 of the UK's leading visitor attractions, including Chester Zoo, Zoological Society of London, the Treasure Houses Group, Bletchley Park and Go Ape. Suggestions included splitting each day into shorter time slots, as used by Norwegian forecaster YR, which breaks the 24-hour period into 4 6-hour windows, so a brief early morning shower doesn't skew the picture for the rest of the day. A survey found more than 80% of attractions saw this kind of approach as a useful solution. Since the original call in March, support has spread well beyond the visitor attractions sector, with organisations including the National Association of British Market Authorities, the National Market Traders Federation, and UK Events, all adding their backing, a sign organisers claim of how widely weather-dependent trading affects the UK economy.
A 16-year-old is preparing to walk more than 100 miles carrying Viking equipment, including a shield and period clothing. Ryan Olsen from Ellesmere Port and a student at the Whitby High School is taking on the challenge from Chester to York in memory of his late history teacher and fellow Viking reenactor, Hannah Freeman, who died from cancer in September last year. He hopes to raise funds for the blood cancer charity Anthony Nolan. Ryan is a member of the reenactment groups Unknown Vikings of Chester and Hearth of the Valkyrie. He will start his walk on Saturday, July the 18th, carrying Viking equipment and dressed in period clothing. He said, "I wanted to do something that would make a real difference. Miss Freeman meant a lot to me, and this felt like a way I could honour her memory while helping other families facing blood cancer." The teenager aims to complete the more than 100-mile journey on foot in 12 days, beginning at Whitby High School before heading to Chester and then on towards York. His route will take him through Delamere, Winslow, Marple, Glossop, Penistone, Barnsley, Pontefract, Leeds and Tadcaster. He said, "Miss Freeman was the kind of teacher who believed in everyone, even when we didn't believe in ourselves. She made boring history lessons feel like fun activities. And when she was diagnosed with cancer earlier in the year, she passed on to my friends and me a collection that she had been working on for over a decade. I wanted to do something to honour that gift. In preparation for the trek, Ryan has completed several extended walks. Last month, he finished a 23-mile trek from Waverton to Movama in North Wales, his longest yet, which took 12 hours. His fundraising supports Anthony Nolan's work in matching stem cells donors with patients in need of transplants and funding research to improve transplant outcomes. His mother, Steph, said, "Ryan has really thrown himself into this completely. He's training hard, planning every stage of the route and pushing himself far beyond what most teenagers would ever consider. We are all incredibly proud of what he is doing."
A village near Chester has said enough is enough after roadworks to install new water pipes has had a major impact. United Utilities is replacing about 13 kilometres of water mains near Huxley, south of Chester, in weeks that began in January 2026. This has led to temporary traffic lights in Huxley Lane, close to Red Lane and Church Lane. But residents and parents of the nearby primary school have said the prolonged works have gone on long enough. Laurie Kavanagh uses the road to take her children to primary school and says that since the works have begun, it has become a nightmare for adults and children navigating the road. Roads have been repeatedly closed, forcing families into lengthy and, at times, hazardous diversion routes. Parking near the school has been severely restricted for months, leaving many parents to park at the village hall and walk along extremely narrow pavements with young children while traffic queues and frustrated drivers pass by. Most recently, dirty water has been running across the pavement, forcing pedestrians into the road because there is nowhere else to walk safely. A United Utilities spokesman said, "We apologise to the community for the disruption caused by our mains replacement work in Huxley. This project is upgrading 13 kilometres of water mains in the area, replacing ageing infrastructure with more resilient pipes to reduce future leaks and bursts and help provide a reliable water supply for decades to come. We would like to reassure residents that the water seen on the road was clean water used to flush a newly installed water main before it is brought into service. This is standard part of the process. Our team will be on site this week to keep residents updated as the remaining work is completed in the coming days."
Bosses and staff at Chester's Hospice of the Good Shepherd are celebrating after inspectors raised it from requiring improvement to outstanding. The Care Quality Commission, CQC, upgraded the rate of the hospice in Gordon Lane in Chester following an inspection on March the 10th and 11th this year. Director of Clinical Services, Claire Royce, said, "There isn't a single member of the hospice family, patients, carers, medical, fundraising, finance, catering, cleaning, support staff, volunteers and supporters, that isn't excited and delighted by this news. It underlines the immense sense of pride and satisfaction that each of us feels about working in this amazing place and making a difference to so many lives, regardless of our individual roles." Hospice Chief Executive Richard Soulsby added, "I hope that every one of our legion of supporters will share in the pleasure and pride that we all feel as a result of this wonderful development." Jill Hodson-Riley, CQC Deputy Director of Hospitals in the Northwest, said, "At the Hospice of the Good Shepherd, we found a service committed to providing exceptional care during some of the most difficult times of people's lives. People were extremely positive about the care and support they received and described staff as being respectful, supportive, and delivered care in a safe and confidential way. It was clear that they had listened and acted on the findings from our last inspection. This positive feedback was reflected in a survey which showed 100% of people's overall experience was rated as outstanding or good. Leaders were also committed to looking after the welfare of its staff. A range of activities were arranged outside of work to give them the opportunity to connect with each other away from their routine work pressures. This was to promote well-being and provide a sense of community. This also helped reduce staff turnover and sickness absent rates. Staff and leaders at the Hospice of the Good Shepherd should be proud of the many positive findings in our report, which highlight their exceptional and important care and support."
Thank you. Well, we hope that you find our selection of news items of interest this week. I'd like to thank our readers, Esther, Diane, Kath, Patrick, Margaret, Sarah and Jan, and also Owen, who will be uploading this edition later tonight and stitching the edition together. And I'm now going to invite our readers to join me in saying goodbye to end the live part of this edition. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Teesside Dragons have announced that record-breaking point scorer Jake Witkowski has extended his contract and will remain with the club until the end of the 27-28 season. The popular American forward is currently in the middle of a two-year deal, but has agreed an extension for another season after that. Witkowski hails from Melrose, Massachusetts, and played five seasons of college hockey in the U.S., before coming to the UK midway during the 22-23 season to join Leeds Knights in the NIHL National Division. He switched to the Morley Division Dragons for the 24-25 season and was top point scorer with 52 goals and 58 assists in the Deeside team that finished fourth in the league. Last season he was the club's top scorer again, and broke a 10-year league record for points in the Morley division with 66 goals and 72 assists in 36 games, helping the Dragons to a runners-up spot in both the league and playoffs, and also winning silverware of the Welsh Cup and Morley Cup. Having recently achieved his Level 2 coaching qualification, Witkowski will continue in his role as a player coach. Larissa Edwards, Damami James and Noah Percival have also signed extensions to their contracts to remain with the club.
A day in the life of former footballer Jeff Hurst. Jeff Hurst, 84, was born in Ashton-under-Lyme, Greater Manchester, and he began his football career aged 15 as an apprentice at West Ham. In 1966, he scored a hat-trick in the World Cup final to secure England's victory, and he is the only surviving player from that team. Hurst retired from football in 1984. He went on to work in the insurance industry, and he was knighted in 1998. He and his wife Judith live in Cheltenham. They had three daughters. The eldest, Claire, died of a brain tumour in 2010, and they have five grandchildren. He says, "Even if I've got nothing to do, I won't stay in bed. As soon as I've had my fruit and yoghurt and a coffee, I walk up to the shops, get the papers, anything that gets me out of the house. My wife would go crazy if I was under her feet all day." Judith and I have been married for almost 62 years. Funnily enough, one of the few times she had a go at me was just before the final in 1966. The four semi-final teams were invited to a banquet, but the wives weren't. People talk about the wags, wives and girlfriends, and what have you these days. But back in the medieval days, as I call them, your family wasn't involved, and I didn't see Judith for weeks. Every aspect of the game has been transformed in the 60 years since. After the West Ham matches, we'd all go out to the pub and have a drink with the fans, arguing about why I missed a sitter or who should be playing at right back. And the grounds. Come October, the only bit of green at Upton Park was a couple of yards in the corners. The rest was mud. It used to make me laugh because there were signs everywhere saying, keep off the grass. One thing that hasn't changed is the excitement generated by the World Cup. My own memories of the final are the thrill of running out at Wembley, the roar of the crowd, following Bobby Moore up the steps to collect the trophy, and listening to Alf Ramsey before the game started, the way he protected us and made us feel like a team, a family. A whole that is much greater than the sum of its parts is what Thomas Tuchel has done too. That's his strength. Sure, we've got individuals who are as good as the best as that you'll find in any other country, but Tuchel talks about the team. Can we go all the way? Of course we can. Lunch isn't much, maybe a handful of nuts. You see some footballers who stop playing professionally and pile on the pounds, but I never really had that problem. There was a heart scare a few years back, but I drink and I eat sensibly, and I keep my mind and body active. Do I still kick a ball around? Definitely not. When I walked away from the game, that was it for me. I did not want to be a celebrity ex-footballer. Having said that, there are advantages to having a name that people recognise. After we lost our daughter Claire to cancer, she was only 45, I started working with Sue Ryder, which provided care for her in the final days. The Alzheimer's Society is the other big one. Figures suggest you are three times more likely to get dementia if you've been a footballer. That's why I supported the ban on heading for young kids. Martin Peters, Jack Charlton, Nobby Stiles, that awful disease took far too many from the 1966 team. When I look at the pictures from 1966, the smiling faces, I wish that one or two of the other lads were still here to watch the England games with me. I don't enjoy being the last one left. People have accused me of not wanting England to win while I'm still alive, saying that I want to be the only World Cup winner. That is nonsense. Nothing would make me happier than to pass on that legacy. Judith has never been in the spotlight, so I have to work hard if I want us to go out for dinner. If there's an England game on, we'll be at home in front of the telly. Mind you, if we get to the final, it would be nice to be at the actual game. I'm always in bed by 11. I had no idea how much my life would change when I scored those three goals in the final. Did that second one go over the line? Don't be silly. Of course it did. It was over by a couple of feet. This was adapted from an article in the Sunday Times magazine of Sunday, June the 28th, 2026.
Hello once again, this is Michael Jones with the sports news. Phil Parkinson hailed Wrexham supporters who made the trip to Poland in large numbers to see his side's opening pre-season friendly. The Reds were held to a goalless draw against Wisla Krakow at the Cinerise Arena on Saturday. Around 1,400 travelling fans were in attendance and they earned praise from Parkinson after heading to Krakow in their droves. It's great for our supporters to come and have a weekend away in a great city and see their team at a ground they've never been to before and may never come again, he told the club. That's what it's all about. It's about creating experiences, and I'm glad we've come through unscathed with injuries and a decent workout. Parkinson used 22 players as he named a different team in each half for the first friendly ahead of the 26-27 championship campaign. The fixture was played to celebrate the iconic Polish club's 120th anniversary, and both teams had chances to break the deadlock in front of a decent-sized crowd, with Arthur Okonkwo saving a second-half penalty to earn Wrexham a draw. Wisla Krakow have gone through troubled times, but are back in Poland's top flight after clinching promotion last season, and Parkinson thanked the club for their hospitality. they really looked after as well, he said. There's a lot of connection between the two clubs, and where both clubs have been at times in their history with financial problems. They're building back like we have to. They got promotion last year, and it's definitely a club on the up. Looking at their history, they are one of the biggest clubs in Polish football in terms of trophies they have won. I met the owner, and they are very ambitious to go and make their mark in the top division of Polish football. The Wrexham players and staff flew back after the game and are now preparing for Saturday's clash against Manchester United at Helsinki's iconic Olympic Stadium. We will prepare again for what is another great opportunity for us to go to the Olympic Stadium in Helsinki, added Parkinson. It may never happen again. I've certainly not been to Helsinki, and the lads are going to enjoy that as they've enjoyed today.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello everyone, I have a crossword for you. There are just six words. Three are across and three are down. They are all five-letter words. Let's start with the across clues. One across. That's along the top. Act of removing facial hair. Four across. Flexible and graceful movement. And five across, that's at the bottom, to do with the earth. Now the down clues. One down on the left-hand side. To divide. Two down on the middle section, through the middle letters, later on. And three down on the right-hand side, medical injection to empty intestines. I'll give you the answers shortly. It's Tina back here with the crossword answers. I'll give you the across answers first. One across, at the top, removing facial hair is shave. Four across, through the middle, that flexible and graceful movement is lithe, L-I-T-H-E, and along the bottom, to do with the earth, is terror. Now the down answers. One down, on the left-hand side, to divide, we have split. Two down through the middle, later on is after. And three down on the right-hand side, the medical term for an injection to empty the intestines gives us enema. I wonder if you managed all of those. Certainly well done if you did.
TNF Soundings.
AI, artificial intelligence, creates your dream burger. A scientist has invented an AI tool that can design your perfect burger. Burger AI has been taught 2,216 burger recipes from the website food.com. Using those, it combines your profile with the ingredient patterns it's learned to create a brand new recipe just for you. Professor Ellen Kuhl says it can create the ideal burger recipe to suit your age, taste, ideal texture, nutritional needs, and even your environmental concerns. After blind tests were completed with 100 diners, Kuhl says AI did not just generate plausible burger recipes, it created burgers that real people enjoy. Researchers are excited because they say it marks a new step in AI. Kuhl said, for centuries, food design has been a matter of intuition, experience, and trial and error. We are beginning to show that AI can transform food design. Burgers and big problems. Meanwhile, the United Nations has just published the world's first independent global scientific report on AI. Researchers spoke to 40 experts from across the world and say that the technology could help us to solve some of the world's biggest problems, from improving education and healthcare to tackling climate change. However, they also agree that AI can be used for crime and to spread false information and can increase inequality. They say that as it grows, so do the risks. And to make sure it's used safely, countries will have to work together.
Former tennis champion Andy Murray talks about his life. The former tennis player Sir Andy Murray, 39, grew up in Dunblane. In 2013, he became the first British man in 77 years to win a Wimbledon singles title. He won again in 2016 and was ranked world number one the same year. And he won Olympic singles gold medals in 2012 and 2016. He retired in 2024 and he lives in Surrey with his wife Kim Sears and their four children. He says, "A lot of athletes really struggle with retirement, but I don't miss tennis at all. That was all I did as an adult. Once I removed that structure, I wasn't sure how I'd react or what I'd do next. So much of my identity was associated with success on the tennis court. And that is wrong and it shouldn't be the case. I'm probably more sure of myself now than I was when I was playing tennis. Playing my final match on centre court with my brother Jamie was the best ending. Jamie was also a professional tennis player and I wouldn't have got to where I'd got to without him, and we shared so much time on the court together as kids. To be there with friends and family, even though we lost in the first round, was the best possible way for me to finish. I'd had an operation 2 weeks beforehand and I was lucky to get to play. 3 months into retirement, I got the call from Novak Djokovic asking me to coach him. Well, I'd never coached before, so we agreed initially to try it through the Australian Open. He made it to the semi-final before unfortunately having to quit with a torn leg muscle. He and I spoke a lot about my retirement and how I came to that decision. It's hard to know when the right time is. I was unfortunate in that my major injuries came when I was ranked number one in the world in 2016. I never really recovered from that, whereas most athletes are at the top for a sustained period and then experience a gradual decline in results. The artist Maggie Hamling asked if she could paint me. It was challenging because she wanted me to land on my serve in the painting. After 2 minutes, I needed to move, but she was having none of it, and this exchange was repeated for a few hours. She chain-smoked throughout, and there were cigarettes all over the floor. I was surprised by her vision for the painting, as I initially thought I'd just sit in a chair. I have a few of her pieces myself. I'm happy our kids aren't bothered about my tennis career. I was motivated to keep playing until they were old enough to understand and come to watch me. But that becomes selfish. When Kim brought them to see me when the Nottingham Open in 2023, she said they moaned the whole way there. I decided not to coach again for a long while, but then Jack Draper asked me to help him. When I was younger, I would get conflicting advice from former British number ones. It's hard for a 20-year-old to navigate, and it can be confusing. I agreed to help as much as I can. I don't need to be on tour with him. Last year, when I wasn't at Wimbledon, I didn't miss it at all. But it'll be fun to be there with Jack. With the introduction of electronic line calling in tennis, there's not really any need for an umpire or line judges, but then there's no fan engagement. From a purely sporting perspective, it's better. You get the correct outcome every time. But if you want sport to be entertainment as well, then the challenge system added something. I wish I could become a pro golfer. Am I a better golfer than Carlos Alcaraz? Yes, I am. Through the end of the 2016 season, my body was sore and my hip was already problematic. I had a hip resurfacing operation in 2019. Decisions that you make in your early to mid-20s influence your later career. There were tournaments I should not have played, but my mentality was to work hard regardless. I wasn't particularly bothered about getting married. For me, having kids felt like a bigger commitment. My first art purchase was a Damien Hirst butterflies painting. I was invited to a Banksy private sale event in central London, where the windows were blacked out, and both Kim and I thought it was a prank. This was adapted from an article in the Times magazine of Saturday, June the 27th, 2026.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Clean Sweep Brain Teaser at the Juice Bar. Welcome to Lindsay's Ear Spy activity for yourself or with others. Listen carefully to this one-sided imaginary telephone conversation and find out how many fruit names you can recognise along the way. The correct number will be announced at the end. Asked me to open up early, expecting a few crates of pineapples. They're planning a Hawaii-themed weekend, as business has been a bit slow. I don't know why, Pip. The shop is opposite the fitness centre and en route to the train station, so should be prime position for health-conscious consumers. Think it's been getting to Bill Berry, the owner. His twin sons, Logan Berry and Blueberry, have stepped in to mind the place for their parents so they can get away for a short break. On a scenic coach trip of the Scottish Highlands. Yes, they should be taking the delivery, but Muggins here said I was cleaning, happy to help. Besides, having a nose at the reviews while I wait. No worries, as you say, Pip. All perks of the job. Though not sure what this customer was expecting in a trendy juice bar. 3 stars. Vast amount of flavour choices. Too confusing when ordering. Should have less blends and more obvious well-known drinks, like plain orange or apple juice. Took me over 15 minutes just to decide, and that ate into my shopping trip. Pauline, Newcastle under Lyme. Actually, I quite fancy the antioxidant overload. Got cranberry, blackberry, and strawberry. Sort of a burst of woodland wonder. Might ask for a takeaway bottle later. This couple are from your neck of the woods, and they raved about this month's special. 5 stars. Awesome place. And the special oceanic twist made us both feel homesick as missing the taste of fresh jackfruit. Although addition of the kiwi did affect the texture slightly. All in all, a great pick-me-up after the gym session. Mango Grove and Cherry Orchard, Australia. Now, about this medieval fundraiser for the community gardening project. I haven't been able to confirm dates when Nick is available yet, let alone find costumes. Funnily enough, the twins are organised in advance for that. Even got names for their fantasy characters, Dragon Fruit and Black Currant. Well, Knights of the Round Table vibe, of course, Pip. Would expect nothing less of that pair of drama enthusiasts. Talking of loyalty to the table, 1 star. Nothing clearly stated anywhere about how long the free commuters grab smoothie offer lasted, which turns out to be specifically consisting of grape, raspberry, apricot and banana. Would have been sensible to have a drinks loyalty voucher to be ticked off per purchase, like other places do for coffee or tea for return customers. Dafydd, Port Marion, Gwynedd, Wales. Pip, I'm not that old. How would I know what fruits were available in medieval times? They can always invent something for the occasion. Seems they managed to blend this drink to order. 5 stars. Innovative tasting session on Thursday night. Discovered all sorts of exotic, delicious fruits I had never tried before. Complimentary blend of own favourites, pomegranate and plum, as a gift, was appreciated. Planning to buy more as family gifts. Ganesh, Palmer, India. Right you are. Big class today? Well, best let you get on and set up the Pilates workout equipment. Bye for now. Did you recognise the fruit mentioned? Total count was 24. The oldest fruit most recently discovered was a fossil in Patagonia, South America, at 52 million years old. It is believed to be of the Physalis family of fruits, such as the cape gooseberry, which is still harvested today in South American countries and Australasia. Perhaps not quite an odd pairing as it seems, because 50 million years ago, South America was closer to Australia and had a much warmer climate. The oldest British fruit is generally thought to be wild apples, dating back to the Stone Age. Here is the full list of answers read out in the order they were originally spoken. Pineapples, bilberry, loganberry, blueberry, orange, apple, lime, cranberry, blackberry, strawberry, jackfruit, kiwi, mango, cherry, dates, dragonfruit, blackcurrant, pear, grape, raspberry, apricot, banana, pomegranate, plum. If you did catch all 24 of them, well done. And if you missed a few, hope you still enjoyed the challenge.
TNF Soundings.
Blue cat. A family was a little bit worried when their female cat came home bright blue last week. Wilbur's owner, Sophie Jenkins, posted an image to her neighbourhood Facebook page to ask if anyone knew what had happened, fearing that she'd been attacked with toxic paint. What really happened? Wilbur had wandered into a neighbour's garden, gatecrashed a baby gender reveal party, and rolled around in the blue dye. Sophie said, "We have not stopped laughing since. It's so funny. If you ever find your cat in a similar situation, vets recommend wrapping them in a towel to prevent them licking themselves and contacting your vet."
Tennis player Emma Raducanu talks about her life. Tennis player Emma Raducanu, 23, was brought up in Bromley in Kent. In 2021, she won the US Open as a qualifier without dropping a set, the first British woman to win a Grand Slam since Virginia Wade in 1977. She reached a career-high ranking of 10 the following year, but her progress has been hampered by a string of injuries and she was forced to withdraw from this year's Wimbledon. Off the court, she has represented brands including Uniqlo. She says, "I'm a perfectionist. Your inner critic can drive you to do it better, but it can also be destructive. I'm better now at recognising and celebrating the progress that I do make. The way my parents pushed me opened so many doors. I would practice before primary school in my uniform because there was no time to change. After school, I was at my childminder's until 6:30 p.m. because my parents both worked. Then I would practice in winter floodlights and rain until 8 p.m. Being injured teaches you to be grateful. It makes you realise how much you really want to do what you're doing. You're watching tournaments go by with such big fear of missing out that you'd do anything to get back out there. Previously on tour, I might have thought, oh, I'm so tired. But when you're immobilised, you realise you weren't tired, you were just complaining. I have thought about my early success as both a blessing and a curse. I have access to amazing opportunities, but with that come other worries and injuries. I found the novel The Midnight Library a great lesson about not assuming that things may have turned out better a different way. I started being recognised after Wimbledon in 2021. After I beat Sarana Sestea, people were peering into the windows of my car as I left. After the US Open, it was much more noticeable again. Very quickly, it's happening every day, so you get used to it.
Some things you don't, like being followed. But the people who come up to me aren't the ones who are shouting at me online. They're usually expressing genuine support. Lewis Hamilton took me under his wing at the Met Gala in 2021, so I wasn't on my own. I'd never been to a big event before, and I'd been thrown into the biggest one of the year with this army of photographers. On the red carpet, Cara Delevingne just went from being funny to go into full model mode. Then it was my turn, and I was so awkward. I can't do any other face than a smile. Tennis player Naomi Osaka is so bold and confident to dress how she does on court. I agree that it's important to feel empowered in what you're wearing, and I have the same from working with Claire Waitkeller, the creative director of Uniqlo. I love the simplicity and elegance of my kit. It can feel lonely on those bigger courts. When the stands are very far away, it's just you down there. I love interacting with the crowd. The Red Arrows flew over one day at Queen's Club, and that was really fun. I was runner-up at that year's event. It's so special to have a moment when thousands of people all feel like one. Roger Federer is very polite and classy. One time, everyone was swarming round him for a photo, me included, but he was so graceful with us all. I've spoken deeply with Rafa Nadal too. He had a lot of time for me. Lots of my idols have retired now, so it's a different atmosphere on tour when you're all competing against each other. I play best when I'm coming from a happy place. I've tried different fuel over the years, but joy is incredibly important to me. I hope I am an example of navigating my late teens and 20s despite the scrutiny and the adversity. I'm still learning, but I'm trying to put my best face forward to stay respectful and to keep up my spirits. I stay off my phone during big events. There are a lot of negative comments if you lose a match. I have Instagram, but I don't post all my training for the sake of it. Then when people see an advert or a photo shoot, they think that's all you do. Social media is a highlights reel. When I'm off the court, I go into sloth mode. It's how I switch off. I'm always 10 steps behind everyone else. It does take me a while to defrost. This was adapted from an article in the Saturday Times magazine of Saturday the 4th of July, 2026.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hi, I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
This time we're looking at travelling with a visual impairment. What help is available and how to book it? First of all, we looked at air travel.
The most important thing is preparation and making sure that your travel company is aware of your needs. Most airlines require at least 48 hours notice of this to make your travel experience smoother.
Over 75 airports globally, including 17 in the UK and Ireland, are covered by a company called ABM, who provide passenger services for travellers with reduced vision. Personnel are trained to describe the layouts of the surroundings, distances, stairs and obstacles using non-visual language.
They offer guiding and navigation with dedicated staff, providing sight guidance and verbally offering an arm or an elbow, which includes personal guidance and navigation from your arrival drop-off point to the departure gate. Assistance with navigation to the terminal, duty-free and security areas, and pre-boarding onto the aircraft. They can also help with retrieving luggage and navigating to your onward transport at your destination.
If you'd like to take your guide dog, ABM ensure service animals remain with the passenger, are safely processed through security, and have access to airport relief areas.
ABM integrates with programmes like the Hidden Disability Sunflower Lanyard Scheme, helping staff quickly identify and support passengers who have low vision or non-visible sight conditions. Visually impaired assistance with ABM or any other airport special assistance provider is completely free of charge.
ABM stand at the airport can offer help if needed and you haven't already booked. The good news is that UK airports and airlines are legally required to provide special assistance to people with disabilities who travel by air at no extra charge and with no proof of disabilities needed.
Next, we approach the Rail Delivery Group to find out about what assistance is available for visually impaired travellers on the trains. A Rail Delivery Group spokesman said,
"Making the railway more accessible is important so passengers can travel independently, safely and with confidence. We are working to improve the support available for people with accessibility needs, including those who are blind and partially sighted. We want a railway that works for everyone. To help make this happen, we are working with customers, accessibility groups, organisations supporting blind and partially sighted people, and our staff to make improvements across the network."
The statement continued to say that a range of support is already in place to help people travel more easily. Braille station maps to help blind and partially sighted passengers understand station layouts. Disability persons' rail cards give eligible passengers discounted fares on national rail journeys. Good Maps technology, which is available at certain stations, uses a phone app to give step-by-step audio directions inside stations, helping visually impaired passengers find their way independently. The Hidden Disabilities Sunflower Lanyard lets help staff